Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst, from swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guesthouse overlooking the Pacific Ocean. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to support the conservation and restoration of Hearst Castle while offering youth programs for underserved students. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, STEAM, along with studying the legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture. Discover how you can become a member by going to foundation@hearstcastle.com and learn how you can support this unique and invaluable mission.
My name is Richard Thomas Keat. I'm married to Mary Kennedy, who works with me. We're partners in this business. We're both very interested in doing design work, you know, and making tiles and architectural ceramics and so forth. I've been doing it for about 45 years.
So you're getting the hang of it.
Yeah. And she was a potter that did some of the most amazing sculptures that I ever saw in clay. When the Northridge quake happened, her house was actually knocked off the foundation, and everything she ever made in her life was completely destroyed.
Wow.
And so at that point, we became really good friends, and she decided she'd come work with me and then for me, and then we got married. And
were you in Ojai at that time?
No, she was in Simi Valley, and I was in Thousand Oak. And then we came out here just on a whim to see what Ojai was all about.
And this was back in the early 80s?
This would have been like in the late 80s. Yeah, we went to see an art show in the park. And when we got there, there was this guy named Billy Dorsey who I had bought several paintings that he had done. His style suggested that he would have been somebody that died back in the 1940s because his work was just like those very, very famous people. I said, "Are you the junior version of it?" You know, and he said, "No." Long story short, he said, "Well, we really love this place already. Is there any place around here near downtown for sale that you know of?" Because we were having a nice chat. He said, "Yeah, come with me." So we go to his house, which is like literally almost in the park. We're talking for like about 10 minutes. You know, we're just looking for something cheap that we can fix up. Mm-hmm. And he says, "Okay, I'm going to stop you right there." And I said, "Okay." He said, "Turn around." There was a sign about 5x5 in front of this place for sale for $1,400.
What?
Yeah. It was a teardown. It was It was railroad worker housing, and it was the only one that hadn't been torn down when they forgot about it because it was on the other side of the road. So we bought it, we fixed it up, and turned it into a craftsman-style home.
Is that where we are now?
Yeah, it's where we are now. Uh-huh. Yeah. We got a carpenter right now doing some more carpentry.
So tell us about your art and craft, what you do, because it's extraordinary, you've done work on Catalina Island.
Yeah, that was a great job because I got to meet a guy named John Gabriel Beckman. At 27 years old, he was responsible for all the details of the Grauman's Chinese Theater.
Wow.
At 27 years old.
Wow.
He was the guy that designed everything. You know, not the structural stuff, but everything else. Mm-hmm. You know, because of that project, the Wrigleys hired him to come and do the same for the casino in Avalon, which is now considered a world landmark.
And you did some tile work there.
Yeah, he did 9 beautiful undersea garden murals that were painted on the rough concrete, were supposed to be done in tile, and that Riggs had a tile company there just around the corner from Avalon. So he was very upset with the way the murals looked when I met with him on the island. And I don't even know how he found me because I was still at the stage of working in my laundry porch, 6 feet by 20 feet with a washer and dryer and making tiles. I still don't know to this day how, you know, I forgot to ask him, how did you find me? You know, because, you know, I was just getting started. It was more of a hobby than anything. And so he said, "Well, I think you're the right person to do this." So he wanted me to start with the mermaid. See, and what had happened is over the years, like about every 5 years, the maintenance crew would repaint the murals because paint was peeling off and the sun was bleaching it out. Mm-hmm. And they just used whatever cans of color that happened to be in their storage unit and just go out there and repaint things. And so at the point that I, and I actually have it in my book, the mermaid herself had morphed into an underwater vampire, with the way they painted her. And the breasts that were just normal, like yeah. you'd expect on a mermaid, were like flotation devices. You know? It was atrocious. It really yeah. was. So he campaigned with the Wrigleys to at least start by getting the mermaid mural done the way it should have been done.
In tile.
Yeah,
in tile. And you did that.
Yeah. And what
and he, you can see your work today out there.
Yeah, it's still out there, yeah. What he had to give me, he gave me all these things that I really have to take him to a museum once I trust the museum to take good care of him. He gave me all of his sketches, but none of them were finished because when he was about 70% done with each of those sketches, William Wrigley Jr., who was an impatient man, said, okay, just stop that. Just start painting. Just start putting them up there. No more, like, just whatever you want to do, just do it, but get it done. So he stopped and did it. And unfortunately, like I say, the paint didn't last because mm-hmm. it was just painted on. Oh, and that was, I forgot, Wrigley wanted to do it with his tile company. And John said, no, you only have 8 colors to offer me. I need about 800 colors wow. to do this right, you know. So he found me, and mm-hmm. I started making color palettes for him to choose from. And,
and
so
what
forth.
Time was in history was this?
That would have been like around 1975. Uh-huh. Yeah. I was just fresh out of high school and freshly married out of high school. Yeah, I was in the middle of college, actually, at that time. Yeah.
Did that establish your reputation as an extraordinary artist in tile?
Well, I don't know because I never thought of myself that way. You know, I just had a passion for it.
Yeah.
But, you know, we get praise from time to time, which is always nice, but it's always, for me, it's always a little bit discomforting.
Right.
You know, because it's like, well, we think we do a good job, but and we're happy that you think so too.
But you have multi-millionaire clients who yeah. have you do custom projects on mansions.
Yeah, probably the most significant projects that we've done in that regard is King Hussein of Jordan. We did his new palace in the mountains looking down at Amman because he'd had so many assassination attempts that the original palace, the walls weren't high enough to clear the new skyscrapers had been mm-hmm. built so these sharpshooters could actually see into the home within the walls.
Wow. Did you have to go to Jordan to do some work?
We didn't have to. They wanted us
right.
to. But the only reason they wanted us to was to oversee the tile installation. Mm-hmm. And the architect that lives in and found us for him is right here in, just right here, not in Ojai, but just outside of Ojai. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so then we got some emails explaining all the protocols to go there. And it was like, don't talk to anybody. Don't speak any English. Don't have anything on you that has any English words in
wow.
it. You know. And there were 3 or 4 different sects of Islam, and they didn't get along.
Uh-huh.
And they were constantly sabotaging each other and stuff like that. So we thought, yeah, maybe we'll pass on that. But it is interesting that when the tiles were all made and were going to be sent over there, they gave us an address to ship it to, and that was the White House. Yeah, for his...
For the U.S. For White
his,
House?
Yeah, his 747 was sent over just to pick up our tiles.
Wow.
Which is crazy. It's like, you know, the tiles didn't cost anywhere near what it cost for him to send a 747 over to pick them up.
That's hysterical.
Yeah.
So moving on, what sort of iterations happened to you after that?
Well, we started getting other jobs in Catalina, you know, private homes there, some of the buildings that were in bad shape, you know, that sort of thing. I guess the first thing that I did that made it clear to me and to my now ex-wife, she was very nervous about it. She never could understand how you can just go and continue with your computer job. I was a quality assurance manager for a computer company. It's like, how could you give up a good paying job to do that? Well, about a week later, this guy, I've got to remember his name. He was the first person to be banned from the card tables in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
He's a super intelligent guy. He created his own foundation for like very, very high level mathematics and even theoretical mathematics and mm-hmm. that sort of a thing. Anyway, he came in with his wife. He just wanted some of our decorative tiles for this mansion that he was building in Spyglass Hill down south overlooking the ocean. And I had been there a week before. And I had a jacket that I had glued some pockets in that were just the right size for my tiles. I was wearing a coat that weighed about 40 pounds. Right. I was trying to get the attention of the contractor because I could see that they were getting pretty close to being done. Long story short, he said, well, okay, well, can I see your tiles? And I opened up my coat, you know, I was like, you know, I'm not flashing you, buddy. I'm just showing you the tiles, you know.
That's
so he said, well, if you want to pick any of them or all of them to show the client, you're welcome to. So I'm holding it like this and he's pulling tiles. Okay, I'll take this one, and this one. A week later, the owner shows up with his wife. Anyway, he showed up at my house and I had to bring him around into the, you know, laundry porch. And I thought, oh, they're not going to want to order from me because I'm working in my laundry porch. Well, he did. He ordered a bunch of tile. I thought, okay, that's great. This is going to be my first real job, you know, making for somebody. And then, as it turned out, I had done a bunch of different tessellating turtles over the years, you know, designing them and made them in tile. And I had a bunch of prototypes there. If you can imagine, these were big turtles, and they were about that thick. They were stacked up in a low place under a shelf. All you saw is a bunch of knuckles, one knuckle over the other. And the wife says, are those turtles? And I'm like, you got that from just seeing the shadows of these knuckles coming out, mm-hmm. you know, because not all of the legs had knuckles because some of them were out, you know.
Right.
Anyway, so she said, oh my God, it turns out that she collected turtles from all over the world, not living turtles, but, you know, like $200,000 jade carved turtles and,
wow.
and turtle jewelry and lamps that were made out of beautiful turtle shells and so forth. So he said, you know, where do you want to use the turtles? And she said, how about in the entryway? And I said, well, yeah, that's fine. Cutting to the short of it, turns out that because he had a corner lot, he had to do the sidewalk all the way down one side, about half of a football field, and down the other side, half a football field. They wanted to do all in turtles.
Oh my gosh.
And then the walkway into the house and the front entryway in turtles.
And you did that?
Yeah.
That and kept you busy for a while.
Yeah, it did. And the crazy thing about it, and this is the part that like I find to be so sweet about how what a sweet man he is and was. He's 98 right now and he's sharp as a tack.
Wow.
So I'm not as sharp as him because I can't remember his name right now. So he said, well, how much are they? And I said, I froze. I was like, I have no idea. I have no idea how much they cost me to make. I have no idea how much to charge you. I don't know. And he put his hand on my shoulder and he said, how about $100 a piece? And at that time, I almost fainted. I was like, $100 a piece? This is crazy. So I was all flustered. And I said, I don't know. I've never sold one. I don't know what to do. I don't know how much to charge you. He said, how about $200 a piece? That fast.
Oh my gosh.
And I said,
he thought you were holding out.
Yeah, I know. So I said, I don't know. That's probably enough. And he said, okay, I'm going to make this easy on you. $300 a piece, and you just say yes right now.
How funny.
Yeah, and I said, yes. And what he bought, I went from this 800 square foot house, which my wife was getting tired of, you know, with three kids and a tiny house like that. We bought a house a few blocks away that had a swimming pool, a basketball court, balconies, five bedrooms, four bathrooms. And it was really close to the school that the kids were going to.
So turtles paid for your house.
Yeah, they did. He just wrote a check right there and then.
Wow. How many turtles did you make?
You know, I don't remember the number, but in dollars, it turned out to be like somewhere around $400,000.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then I was able to buy proper kilns. I had a 3-car garage studio at that point, you know, with a lot of big expensive kilns and so forth.
Wow. So moving on to today, who are some of your clients and what are some of the coolest projects you're doing? You'd mentioned Seattle.
Yeah, that was, so Oracle, we did a bunch of tiled pots for the guy that started Oracle. I forget his name off the top of my head. So also then these other two guys, one was the CEO, he was the bookkeeper for the business, he was the money guy, right? Mm-hmm. The other one was the engineer, top engineer. So they became co-top dogs there.
And what did you do for them?
So it was the engineer bought an entire block of downtown Seattle. It was the very first municipal buildings that they did that housed all the government for the city of Seattle. He bought it because they were in bankruptcy, deep in bankruptcy. So he bought it from them for something like $40 million or I think it was probably like $400 million actually, you know, something like that.
Wow.
Because one of the buildings that he had us do tile for was the library. And everything was kind of like Greco-Roman architecture with big pillars and so forth. And so the library, he had all kinds of architects, you know, doing interior design and so forth. And he decided he wanted a place in the library that was called the Sunroom Reading Room, which was for kids and their books and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
He knew when I mentioned M.C. Escher and his tessellations.
Right.
So he saw my repertoire of tessellations and he wanted the turtles. And he ended up with one, and I have an image of it in there, that's about 24 feet long and about 8 feet wide with a border around the perimeter. I made secondary patterns with all the turtles so that there was like moire patterns running through it. So it had a mathematical aspect to it, which he appreciated. And he thought that that was something that was educational in that sense also. Mm-hmm. And this is outside of my tile, but very quickly, there were 64 pillars. And he was an architectural, you know, he was somebody that was just completely immersed in architecture, even though that wasn't what he did for a living. And so he recognized that the proportions weren't right. So he had all 64 of those that were done in concrete and painted to look like marble. He had them all removed and replaced them and brought the building up another like 6 feet for those taller pillars. He had actual marble ones made for $1 million a piece, $64 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
Off the scale.
Yep.
Okay. Only because I have another appointment in Ohio. We're going to have to fast forward.
Okay.
Years ago, I stopped in and visited you. Mm-hmm. And at that time, you were just finishing up your first iteration of something that I believe is a game changer in construction materials.
Right.
You found a way to recycle unrecyclable glass and turn them into bulletproof tiles. That you hit a hammer on one to show me, and it wouldn't, crack.
This is an example of one before it's been fired to 900 degrees. Mm-hmm. This comes out of a mold. There's no shrinkage in or out of the mold. And after it's fired, there's no shrinkage either, which is different. You know, with clay is different. So you can kind of get a sense like, so this one's not fired yet. It's somewhat solid, but you know, it hasn't been fused. So you can hear that's that's got a certain ting to it, mm-hmm. right? But after 900 degrees, you've got this.
Wow. And you're hitting that as hard as you can there.
Yeah. And this is, you can see the detail is very detailed.
Mm-hmm, fair.
And they're just incredibly durable. And this one is 90% recycled glass. And the glass that I get, it's not purified. As a matter of fact, at one point, it's going to sound crazy, I took a 50-pound bag and I spent a whole week with tweezers pulling everything out of it that was like a little chip of metal or something like
foreign,
that.
Foreign objects.
Foreign objects, yeah. And I thought, well, I wonder if those are really a problem. And I thought, because that's going to be siphoning all those out, it's going to be a problem. So what I was buying is a product called VitroGrit. They were using the recycled glass as sandblasting material. Actually, is a better sandblasting material because it doesn't damage whatever is that like you're trying to blast off of your scum on your swimming pool or something like that. So then the rest of it basically is like a cementation material. The thing that's probably the most secret, so to speak, you know, it's just basically a ceramic mix that's in dry powder that helps to hold the whole thing apart while it's curing and before you fire it. But again, it's 90% glass.
One of the huge issues in America's recycling efforts, you go to any glass shop and they have their boneyard on the side with giant tempered glass panels. And I go, what are you going to do with those? Well, we just go to the dumps. We can't recycle it. Yeah. But you found a way, one, to recycle it. Two, you found a way to create roofing tiles that would be bulletproof.
Yeah.
Why has that not gone viral yet?
Well, it was a design issue with the roof tiles to be able to make ones that are extremely durable, for one thing, and that are thin, very thin, and you can walk on them and so forth.
Right,
you know? And they attach to each other, you know, so it's a geometric system, you know, that works.
So is that happening? Is that prototypical?
It's one of those things where, like, it's so hard to do what we are doing with, and we've done, like I say, we're still doing a lot of work with this and selling it. Well, not just the turtles, but we're making architectural pieces out of the glass that we do. I came up with a name for the glass, but I don't really think about it because it was sort of like a marketing name, you know, they call it. It's on some of the labels of some of the jars back there, but I can't think of what it is. It's something that I keep finding time here and there to work on more. And so most recently, my wife and I we've had to sort of like sever our differences in terms of like, you know, she's doing what she wants to do now, and I want to do what I want to do. And so we sort of have a handshake agreement that I'm going to have the time now to start doing that more.
That's really cool. Only because I have to go to another appointment. I'm going to leave, but I'm coming back. We're going to do part two. This is just fascinating.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah.
Okay, if somebody wanted to learn more about your world of tile,
right,
where would they go?
Unless they're going to come to us in person, they could get to us through our website, just rtkstudios.com, and they can email us at rtkstudios1979@gmail.com.
And somebody could call you or contact you to make an appointment to come here to the studio.
Yes, yeah. We advise that because we're not always here. Sometimes we're out on a job site, that sort of thing. We don't turn anybody away at the door, you know, they can drop in, it's fine. Richard Thomas Keat, and my wife is Mary Kennedy.
Richard, thank you so much. This has been fascinating. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Ojai, California. We'll see you here.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst, from swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guesthouse overlooking the Pacific Ocean. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to support the conservation and restoration of Hearst Castle while offering youth programs for underserved students, preserving the past and inspiring future generations of dreamers. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, STEAM, along with studying the legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture. The foundation at Hearst Castle not only changes the lives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors and members. Discover how you can become a member by going to foundation@hearstcastle.com and learn how you can support this unique and invaluable mission. You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory, produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer on KCBX Radio. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.